First, labor unions and their members are seen as a mainstay of support for Democratic candidates. Union political expenditures have been declining for years and are dwarfed by spending for corporations. But the fact that unions support Democrats over Republicans 9-1 with the tens of millions of dollars that they do spend means they're still players to be reckoned with. The conservative organization American Compass recently posted an open letter from business people, former government officials, including former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, economics professors, and U.S. Senator Marco Rubio. Titled A Seat at the Table, it makes the case that the U.S. conservative movement should treat organized labor and other workers as potential allies instead of opponents. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you conservative and also a member of a labor union yourself? Do you think that conservative leadership has prioritized the needs of business and owners over those of, say, blue-collar workers and other employees? What would you like to see the Republican Party and other conservatives focus on to meet the needs of working people? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Kirk Doran signed the statement. He's the Henkels Family Collegiate Chair and Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Notre Dame. He studies labor markets, the workforce, productivity, and innovation. Kirk, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, the main recipient of this message is other conservatives and leaders of the Republican Party. What do you want them to hear when it comes to the need to think about labor as a potential ally, not an adversary?
Well, I think what I want them to hear as an economist is that things that conservatives often hope for the economy, such as productivity, innovation, efficiency, all of those things might be able to be obtained better than we're obtaining them now if corporations learned to work with workers in an organized way.
What might that look like?
Well, it could look like a number of things. And around the world, people do many different things that aren't done in the United States, partly because of our outdated laws. But among them, the options include things like what happened in Germany, where all corporations that are above a very small size, all employers that are above a very small size, end up having to have the opportunity for workers to form not an employees union, but just a works council whose members are elected and whose members work with the management of the company to send ideas back and forth, to communicate, and to make plans to improve the workers' conditions and hopefully improve the productivity of the company.
Does an employer in that situation have to listen to those workers and those workers' councils?
Well, it depends on the topic, but in general, for most topics, no. And of course, this could be implemented in a variety of different ways and is implemented in a variety of different ways around the world. So really, there's a number of options that are on the table for the United States, but to even explore those options, we have to get away from the binary thinking that we've been in for many decades.
Right. Talk about what you see as the limitation of our current labor laws in this country to getting to a different place that you think might work better.
Right. Well, the Wagner Act of 1935, the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947, they were developed in a different era. It was an era in which there was a stark contrast between production workers, who were thought to be mainly concerned with wages and perhaps working conditions of a direct sort, and managers who were assumed to be fully capable of operating their business without any employee input. It was a world in which the economy was relatively closed, at least to competing economies that might be able to exert global wage competition. It was an economy in which there was a lot of assembly line mass production of very standardized goods. And it was an economy in which family wages and benefits were assumed and tended to happen in the context of a lifetime employment of a male breadwinner. And basically, none of these conditions are true anymore. I think management needs more worker involvement today, partly because the economy is more open, and as a result, production has to be more flexible and quality-related. Workers have other interests than they used to. The workforce is more diverse, and certainly jobs are less stable. So we need to have a different context for our laws. We do have a different context for our laws, and therefore probably we need different laws.
Talking to Kirk Doran from the University of Notre Dame, economist there. He signed on to a letter published by the conservative group American Compass saying conservatives should think more about ways to share the benefits of the economy with workers and get workers involved in helping shape decisions about what happens at the places they work. Now, yesterday was the anniversary of the publication, I understand, of this influential document from economist Milton Friedman, who influenced a lot of conservatives in economy and politics over the years. He said, you know, first and foremost, companies should think about shareholder value. And I think there's going to be still a lot of conservatives out there, Kirk, who think, well, it seems like your idea, you know, bringing the workers on board might get away with this prime directive for companies, maximizing shareholder value. What would you say to them?
Well, I think it's an open question whether the prime directive, or certainly the only directive of companies, should be maximizing shareholder value. And furthermore, in the attempt to maximize shareholder value, listening to people who aren't shareholders might actually help. Given both of those facts, I think especially an organization like American Compass would be sort of less interested in the libertarian sort of Ayn Rand style arguments and a little more about bringing conservatism back to its roots. Roots like the square deal promised to the working man by Teddy Roosevelt more than 100 years ago. So a focus on growth for its own sake and some sort of assumption that growth's benefits are going to trickle down to everyone, it's not really tenable. And I think a lot of conservatives would believe that for the sake of workers, for the sake of workers' families, and indeed for the common good of our national life, we really need to consciously pursue growth, which actually sustains communities and sustains institutions.
Go ahead.
Well, I would say that a lot of conservatives, I think, would agree that we need to seek resilience, not just efficiency in our economic life.
Now, that's the outreach to conservatives there. People active in the labor movement might think, well, hold on, conservatives and Republicans are the ones who have limited organizing power through right-to-work laws, changes at the federal level, cuts collective bargaining abilities for public employees in Wisconsin and elsewhere. Do you see any way to overcome that potential skepticism?
Well, I think as long as labor relations are seen as fundamentally adversarial, I think our two-party system is going to involve one party taking one side and one party taking the other. But I think a broader, more flexible understanding of what labor relations is could see labor relations as having varying degrees of cooperation. And once that happens, then it's no longer a political necessity that each of our two major parties divide up on easy lines on that issue.
Can you talk about how a decline in worker organizing power, whatever the representative organization of that might look like, can affect things like what workers get paid and get in terms of benefits over time?
Well, I think that, you know, employers can get into a bad equilibrium where employee productivity is low. And because employee productivity is low, they basically have to be paid low or the company would go out of business. And it's a vicious cycle. But there's potentially multiple equilibria in that labor market. And one can envision a circumstance in which workers' councils or other interventions actually allow sufficient cooperation that employers are able to pay their employees more precisely because the employees are able to be more productive, precisely because there's better communication and cooperation with management. And, you know, companies that have tried doing this on their own have sometimes seen a lot of success, but a key feature in the subset of those companies that have tried to do this and have succeeded is not just paying their workers more. It's paying workers more and actually having good lines of communication back and forth. If it's just paying them more, you can't really get out of that bad equilibrium. But if it's paying them more and having the communication, then I think you can.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Sherry is with us in Minocqua. Sherry, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
What did you want to bring up, Sherry?
How's it going?
Very well.
Oh, I'm not really sure. I just called in because I guess the statement was, you know, my stance on, I guess, conservatives and, like, what is that, the labor unions. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the South, and I moved to Wisconsin, and we don't have labor unions, you know, in the South, and a lot of companies are coming down there because, you know, it's cheap labor, and, you know, they don't allow unions down there, and I guess it's just, like, really tricky, like, I guess, like he said, to find, like, a happy medium where it's flexible. you know.
Sherry, thanks a lot for that call. Go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Sherry. You point out that there's competition within the United States, geographical competition, in which localities will compete for companies to relocate there, potentially relocate some jobs by offering either tax incentives or, as you pointed out, actually making it hard for unionization to occur. And I think, you know, what I think a lot of conservatives involved in this statement are envisioning is something that's sufficiently flexible that it wouldn't be this dichotomy between an adversarial labor union that potentially will cause the company to face deleterious global wage competition, as we saw perhaps in the 1980s in Detroit, versus nothing at all. I think the key maybe to overcoming the deleterious competition between states that you correctly brought up, Sherry, is probably that flexibility of different options. In particular, if we're able to adopt options that are win-win, as we've seen perhaps occurring in other notable competing countries, we could move directly beyond that dichotomy, and it would actually be in the interest of everybody to allow those options to occur throughout the United States.
Thanks for calling in, Sherry. We're talking to Kirk Doran right now, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Notre Dame. He signed on to an open letter from the group American Compass. It's called A Seat at the Table. It's called A Statement on a Conservative Future for the American Labor Movement. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of the ideas our guest has suggested, possible ways to find common ground between conservative politics and the interests of workers in America, maybe even organized labor in the United States? Do you think we need different ways to represent workers in the United States, some alternative between a labor union and nothing? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We pick up our conversation with Kirk Doran, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Notre Dame. He signed on to an open letter from the group American Compass looking at a possible change in the way conservatives in the United States think about labor, and a possible change that the labor movement could think about how workers are represented in the business world. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Let's start with David with us in Milwaukee. David, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, David?
Hi. Well, I'm a member of the Milwaukee International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 494, and I just wanted to bring up something that your guest has a good point. There is room for there is room for unions to support conservatives. They will support and court, you know, politicians or, you know, political ideologies anywhere as long as it benefits them as their industry or their workers. Currently, they support a more liberal agenda, i.e. Joe Biden, completely anti-Trump. And it's an insane thought to think that it just seems so far away right now on anything that the current conservative leadership in our country or state is showing, to think that a union member or the actual union themselves would ever think about wanting to give any money or support towards conservatives right now.
David, thanks for the call. Kirk, what do you think?
Well, I think that's a really good point, David, that there's a pretty stark contrast there right now. I mean, I think that chambers of commerce are now starting to support Democrats, and Democrats are certainly getting a lot of support from Wall Street. And so in that world, maybe that opens up a political opportunity for some conservatives to court certain segments of labor. You know, I'm an economics professor, not a political science professor, but it seems to me there's an opening there.
Thanks for the call, David. We'll go to Scott now in Luxembourg. Scott, hi.
Good afternoon. I have a comment and a question. The comment was, I was a mid-level manager for about 18 years and became very disillusioned with it. In one of the positions I held, a member of the leadership team would ask me each morning, not how my day was going or what we were doing, but what are you doing to maximize shareholder value? That was his line to me every morning. Secondly, I had a question that it's about the stock markets. I don't know if it's necessarily related to this, but it seems a lot of money is invested going back and forth in the stock market, which doesn't seem to go back into the companies themselves, but back into buying more stock. And I wondered if that would be beneficial to the workers if they were investing more stock into capital improvements and helping things of that nature.
Interesting. What do you think, Kirk?
Yeah, first of all, with reference to the comment, I think that fits what I've learned as a professor as well, is it takes place in many of our employers. So that's too bad, and it's a lesson our employers need to learn. But I think in reference to finding ways to invest in workers and whether companies can make use of all the avenues, all the financial avenues there, I think they should. I mean, I think a lot of it's not so much that many companies right now have the financial capability to invest more in workers, but they don't think it's worth their while. So we need to set up a situation where there's sufficient communication between workers, who often have the best ideas of how to improve things on the front end, and those who have the authority to make decisions about training or changing the conditions of workers. We need to set up a situation where there's sufficient communication between those parties where that investment's even possible. And, you know, there's a lot of avenues through which companies could pay for that.
Scott, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing your experience and your question. We're talking to Kirk Doran right now from Notre Dame, economist there. He signed on to a letter from the group American Compass saying we need to rethink the way we represent workers in the American economy. And he says there's a lot of room for cooperation between conservatives and workers. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with Dennis now in Milwaukee. Dennis, hello.
I'm doing good. I just wanted to make a comment about the biggest manufacturer here in Milwaukee. It was Briggs & Stratton. And they didn't like the union, the younger management crew that was running the company didn't like it. And so they moved all their manufacturing facilities down to the southern states, Georgia, Missouri, Kentucky. And now the corporation is in trouble because they just wound up filing bankruptcy because now they have to pay for all that moving and stuff, and it led them to bankruptcy.
Boy, that is I mean, we don't want states competing with each other about those things when that competition is based on an artificial dichotomy. As I said, we want states competing with each other about or really corporations competing with each other, people competing with each other based on how well workers and management can cooperate. And so we got to add some flexibility into that system to help prevent things like that from happening.
Thanks for calling in, Dennis. Rob joins us now in Madison. Rob, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I watched Right to Work and Act 10 and all the rest of that, Act 10 first, of course, and then the Right to Work, here in Wisconsin with Scott Walker when he was the governor, and, of course, Voss and Fitzgerald having such strong majorities. I watched organized labor and building trades in particular fall into a pattern of, well, this is our governor, and if we want work, we have to support him. Walker wasn't kidding when he said that building trades provided 40% of their households in voters for him in his reelection bids. It comes down to economics to a lot of people, unfortunately, and it supersedes their ideology. Unfortunately, fortunately, the unions, if they stand strong and they have solidarity, they're concerned about workers' rights. They're not so much concerned about their ultimate pocketbook. And I'm just concerned that if the conservatives ever do catch to the idea that, hey, we're going to court these unions, they're not courting the members, they're courting the unions. And that, to me, is rather scary because it changes the whole playing field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I could envision a scenario. Thanks for that comment. I thought it was insightful. I could envision a scenario where conservative movement was courting the leaders of unions. I mean, I think generally unions have been opposed to the kind of things brought up in the American Compass letter that I just signed. They're a little afraid, probably for the reasons you correctly mentioned, of adding flexibility and trying to allow things that have been tried around the world and frankly have worked pretty well around the world compared to what we have out in the United States, because it can be a pretty sweet deal to be the only game in town. So I think you're right. I think that the challenge is distinguishing union leadership from the needs of workers.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute, Kirk, as I read other material from the group American Compass, and it connects to this, I think there seems to be a moral imperative here to try to make sure that capitalism thrives, first of all, but that the benefits of capitalism go to everybody, workers and owners alike. Is that at the root of this?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, shareholder value doesn't mean anything if the whole country isn't able to benefit from that shareholder value. And that's what we got to get back to.
Kirk, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Kirk Doran is an associate professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. He was with us to talk about an open letter that he signed on to, published by the conservative organization American Compass. It's called A Seat at the Table. It's been referred to as a statement on a conservative future for the American labor movement. You can read it, by the way. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. And you can still keep sharing your thoughts. We've got a post up over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can share maybe your experiences, your thoughts, and your reactions, again, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR.